Contemporary Music Centre podcast for September 2007. Composer of the Month, Pearse Halliwell. Part 3. In Part 3, Michael Quinn talks to Pearse about his ties with the Outer Hebrides and his life as a composer and lecturer in Belfast.
Well, let me just risk intruding on the autobiography for a moment longer, but you were born in the north of England, in the Peak District. You've moved to Belfast in 1980. I've been here ever since, but you also have a home in the Hebrides.
Yeah.
Which is very important to you, and very important to you as a composer.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where I write most of the pieces, to be honest. I suppose I lead an urban existence here, and it's just very easy to go through, not days, but weeks, without getting anything written. I mean, partly through teaching and all everything that now goes with it, but also family life and everything. I mean, I have family life up there, but somehow I seem to be able to integrate the two up there. I find that harder in a city. I think the reason is that... Going back to this natural thing we talked about earlier about rock patterns and music being a kind of place, I find it much easier in a very deserted place. I find it much easier to kind of believe in the point of doing things. I find there's something very everyday about cities where some things are much less painful. You're insulated against things like the passing of time because they don't seem... So, I don't know, things seem less sort of poignant in a way. And yet, on the other hand, in a more exposed environment, it also seems more worth doing something about it.
How do you write? Is there a routine, a set process?
Not really, only in the sense that I think that composing, well, I mean, this is the kind of thing that I would say to students, is that when you compose a work, perhaps rather like the sculptor trying to unpack the thing that's hidden in the block of stone, you are doing a kind of onion peeling exercise, and there are outer bits that are quite different from the kind of chopping up inside. And the outer bits often involve generalities. They involve, you know, very general questions like, you know, am I trying to write a single movement work? Am I going to write a, particularly if you have a kind of sound carvings idea like I have had for a series of pieces where it can include pieces with 20 movements, it can include pieces with 3 movements. You know, there are all kinds of big questions about what kind of outer dimensions do you want this thing to have? And then those are things that I find best sorted out and about, walking or travelling or sitting on planes or something. And then there are smaller things. You start to go in, you peel off these skins and you go in. And then you're dealing with, you know, the harmonic language and how you use the instruments and things. And then you start getting down to pianos and computers and things like that.
What do you learn about the piece in rehearsal and in the moment of performance?
Yeah, well, it's usually a huge gap. I mean, I have a horror of being late. Any commissioners, please note, I'm very, very much pride myself on being on time. So I tend to write pieces very early, which often means that I'm working on the next piece before I've heard the last one. And that's very, you know, it's annoying because you need to process these things. I think that there is a potential gulf between the stuff you write on the page and what you actually hear and intended. I think in a sense that sort of developing your craft as a composer is actually to diminish the gap until there's no surprise.
Let me take you back to when you first came to Belfast. You were 24, still a formative age for a young composer. How did the experience of being here affect the way you thought about music and went about creating your own music?
I think that's a long time ago, but the way in which I most remember it affecting me was actually in the, particularly then, I was out of the sort of hothouse. I mean, things were much more metrocentric than they are now in terms of the UK and in terms of the island of Ireland. Much, much more is going on now. And, you know, in many ways, you know, probably always, except financially, I'm sure things are much healthier and maybe even financially in some ways. But in those days, activity was very much perceived to be London-based or home counties-based. And I was never going to be part of that, nor intend to be. But I found it very hard for other... I thought it must be very hard for other people of my age trying to kind of meet the right people in London, as it were, and go to the right concerts and things to develop. And actually, you know, I had a major crisis in terms of my sort of reaction to the music that I inherited, the sort of what people were writing, as it were, which I don't think I could have worked through if I'd been living in a sort of dreary suburb somewhere and copying for one of the big publishing houses to earn a living. You know, I mean, everybody has to earn a living, and that's what some people did, and perhaps they still do. You know, whereas, you know, I was moving into university teaching and things as my crust. And I was actually away from that, so I could sort of have my crisis between about 1982 and 87, 88, you know, in the 80s. I could kind of do this, out of which I started to kind of find some quite substantial works from 1989 onwards. Very important, but I do hate kind of obvious responses to things. And you know, I, then as now, I couldn't think of anything more kind of crass than starting filling my music full of, you know, jigs and reels and stuff, and you know, doing what Gerald Barry called bored falcher music. That for me didn't seem, you know, a positive way forward, and I was very concerned to take something from allowing a different language of music and educate myself, but not on the surface. Well, the most important thing to me in that time was the fact this was a unison tradition. People sitting in a circle play heterophony around one tune. You know, the fiddle plays the tune in a fiddle way with fiddle ornamentation. The flute will play it. It'll be slightly different. It's the same tune, but if you looked at it under a microscope, it'd be slightly different because it's on a flute. And what you have is a blend of this incredibly rich instrumentation, depending on who turns up on the night. Funnily enough, I also got involved in Balinese gamelan in Queen's University as well, because nobody else was thought to be receptive enough to kind of being the sort of department rep, as it were. And so I got landed with it and ended up playing it. You know, I didn't want to turn into a kind of West Coast Californian composer with lots of sort of tinkly Balinese sounds. And, you know, people always hear those things in what I write, completely subjectively. I've been accused of all kinds of klezmer music and Latin American, you know, Paraguayan things. I mean, you know, I don't know anything about any of these kinds of music. I mean, the behaviour of Irish music or Balinese gamelan, I used actually the gamelan notes, the kind of recurring melodies, I used them in a kind of total serialism, actually, because I took the recurring patterns of notes in the tunes that I knew and converted them into numbers and then used them as random number codes so that my materials came back in a similar way, you know, like 1, 3, 4, 2, 5, 2, 3, 1, 4, whatever. Whereas, you know, in gamelan, that might be something like... Once you convert that into kind of 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 2, 1, 2, 3, you can then make that a kind of cipher that governs the sections of a piece or something. You know, nothing to me could be more banal than taking that. I just don't have the kind of alchemy to turn that into something. But I quickly thought that you could actually take the behaviour of the music. I wanted the fact that the same number of materials kept coming back, so there was a great sort of limitation which gave a kind of stylistic framework. I wanted that. I didn't want the sound of it. I wanted the kind of sense of identity and to find a way of creating one of my own.
In one of the Gresham lectures you gave in 2003, you said that the composer who firstly discovers materials from within a musical medium, in doing so, inevitably conditions his stylistic development. Do you think this has happened to your music at any point, and particularly in relation to what we were just talking about?
Actually, I was going to come back to that point. That was quite an important theory that I put in, that I expounded in that lecture. I felt that it's a good starting point for a composer to discover something of the language of a piece actually from the medium that he's working in. So an element of what goes into a string quartet should be kind of discovered from the fact that it's a string quartet. And certainly for students, I think that's a good training. I think, you know, one should discourage too much sort of abstract importing of you know, stuff, and then just sort of putting it onto the quartet. I think that awareness of the medium is likely to bring the instruments and the medium to life. Mm. And I think there are some very distinctive composers who, for example, discover a lot in the medium that they write for. And I think there are other composers, and this is the distinction that that lecture was about, I think there are other composers who very strongly carry around with them a set of apparatus and kind of visit it onto each medium, and are none the worse for that. I think Stockhausen has shown a great propensity for discovering, Berio maybe as well, discovering what is in a medium, whether it is the electronic studio in the Zeitstudien, or you know, the sound of a boy's voice, as in Gesang der Jünglinger, discovering it, and the sound world and the style of the piece, really, the language of the piece, is very much geared by what was possible within that medium. I think the reason I advanced these in this lecture was really because I was becoming almost homicidally fed up with people dividing new music into kind of minimalism and very avant-garde complexity music. And this strikes me as the most banal, kind of witless kind of shorthand. And that just seems to me a much more productive way of, it doesn't work for all composers, than actually just saying, you know, oh, is it sort of repeated rhythms, or, you know, with sort of chords, you know, like, you know, or does it sound, you know, is it sort of avant-garde and you know, non-symmetrical and everything, you know, which strikes me as just about the surface. So as far as I'm concerned, I think I'm somewhere in the middle of that.
Contemporary Music Centre podcast series. For more information, audio and video, log on to www.cmc.ie.